Welcome back. This is Sight to the Blind. I'm going to set the mood. It is 10 o'clock at night. I'm having a glass of Owl Post. It's a Pinotage wine from out of South Africa. I recommend you get a bottle of Owl Post if you like Pinotage wines, or if you know anything about Pinotage wines. It's a combination, I think, of a Cab and a Merlot or something like that. It's soft, it's delicate, it's full-bodied, it's nice. It's going to set the tempo for this show. I'm going to start off with the Cipher. And I've had emails about the Cipher, even the corrections and the mistakes that are found in the Cipher. The only reason why I'm speaking on this, because a brother that I had on this show, Gift, showed me a post of another brother I had on this show, and he went by Sevaart, and he did a TikTok where he took the Millennial Cipher Bible and he threw it in the trash. And he threw it in the trash because he found there was a mistranslation of the Ethiopian Bible compared to the Millennial Cipher Bible. And it had to do with who was in charge of the fallen angels. And he pointed out the differences. So he did a TikTok where he threw it in the trash. And then people, of course, in the comment sections, well, I'm glad I didn't buy it, blah, 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 blah. I didn't want to mention it, but I noticed also there are mistakes in the Cipher, particularly now that they have edited, or I think updated the app. They changed Esau's name from E-S-A-U to E-S apostrophe U. I don't know why they did it. Maybe it's a misspelling, but I don't know why they did it. But also, Jubilees and Jasher conflict each other when it comes to three main character deaths. I'm not really main character, but there's three characters whose death contradict each other on both books. Esau's death, I don't know if it's Jubilees or Jasher, but I know in Esau's death, they say Yaakov, Yasharel, killed Esau, his brother, from the tower when he launched his bow. And Esau's children and grandchildren picked him up and took him and buried him. Another version is that since Esau cut off the head of Nimrod and stole his clothes, when Esau was fighting over the cave and where Yaakov was to be buried, one of the sons of Yaakov, his child, who was, I guess, deaf and dumb, took a sword and cut Esau's head off, which is to say that the manner in which a man has killed or any wickedness he has done, let it recompense on his own self the way that he lived or the wickedness that he lived. So like, for instance, if, like I said, Nimrod's head got cut off by Esau, then the death of Esau should be him getting his head cut off. It's almost like when Jezebel and Ahab, when the blood licked up, when the dogs licked the blood of the man who owned the vineyard that Ahab wanted, Yahuwah said, look, I'm going to make sure that your blood will be licked up by dogs. And it was so. So it's kind of showing you that the Most High is pure and righteous in his judgment. That's why in Revelation it says, he that leadeth in captivity will go in captivity. He killed with the sword shall die by the sword. So you have to use different parts of scripture to validate which story is appropriate to use. Now, does this change anything about the calendar? Does it change how we worship Yah? Not really. Just like finding out what angels was in charge, does that deter you from how you should follow Yah and how you should do it, his feast days and the things that he asked of us to do according to sending smoke offerings, new moon offerings, Shabbat offerings, free will offerings, heave offerings, goodwill offerings? Does that matter if who's in charge of the fallen angels to you? No, it shouldn't really matter. It really shouldn't. And then there's another character, Cain. So it says that Cain, in two stories, it says one that Cain was struck in an arrow because he was up in the forest and they thought from far away that one of his sons or his descendants saw him and thought it was an animal and took a bow, pulled the arrow back, and struck him and died. That's one story. Another story is Cain was building a house of rock and the rocks fell upon him. So if Cain killed his brother with a rock, then rocks falling on him would be his righteous judgment. Like I said, you have to go through other parts of scripture to validate what story you think you should use. Now, like I said before, does this matter? Not really. We know that the enemy has gotten into our history, has gotten into our words and our works. So it doesn't matter what version that you get. Like even the King James didn't have the book of Jasher in it, even though it's mentioned in Joshua chapter 10. But no one's doing videos showing the King James Bible and throwing it in the trash. The King James 1611 didn't have the book of Jasher in it either, but it had some other books. And then we can go on and on about the translations of names and the translation and titles that were given to Yahuwah that they tried to cover up his true name, that they had to know his name in order to cover it up. And there's the different versions of scriptures that are out there that are completely wrong and error too. So what are you going to do? And then the last character is the death of Haran, which was Abraham's brother. I read, I think a couple episodes ago, that Haran died because he tried in his heart that he was either going to follow Abraham or follow Nimrod. And the Most High knew his heart and allowed him to be burnt up in that flame, but Abraham didn't burn up. The other story was that Haran saw the idols in the house of his father and the house was on fire, and Haran ran in to try to save the idols that Terah, his father, set up in that house, and he burned down with the idols. That's another story. Again, does this deter away from how we should walk in this path of righteousness, the Torah, his laws, his statutes, commandments, and ordinances? Not really. Not really. And like I said, the enemy has gotten to all our stuff. So we are really putting pieces back together. And we have to go through other parts of the Bible to understand Yahuwah's mind, his works, his judgment, in order to pick out what story is proper to use. Like, I can't stand, I don't like the Sefer as the way they've been updating it, because they haven't been updating it. You guys also understand that no one of the Israelite bloodline is putting out scripture. None of us have control of our own history. We rely on the enemy, and we rely on people who think they are doing a good cause by editing and translating and putting out different versions. They think they're doing us a service, and they're not. I know the guy that who was the publisher of the Sefer came out and said who the real children of Yasharel is. Good for him. But that also comes with attacks. That also comes with spirits dwelling around him or in him that's causing them to mangle the translation of the Sefer. I don't know why he translated Esau's name to ESU. I really don't know. Even when he has given you an option of reporting bugs and things that are not right, there are misspellings and things that they made it worse. They made it worse than what it was when they first started. When they first started, nobody knew about the Sefer. No one was touching it. So it was really a good version. As soon as people started contacting them, as soon as people started mentioning the Sefer and passing it around, look what happened. The enemy has tried to mangle it, misuse it, misprint it, in order for what? For you to walk away from it completely and say, oh, this is not right. Oh, the translation is wrong. I'm done with this. What story can I rely on? What history or facts can bring this to light to where I can say, all right, this is of Yah. Like, that's what the enemy has done. The enemy has caused you to rethink if this whole walk is for you or not. Like I said, I put in the description box of the part where it says report bugs. I'm like, why did y'all mistranslate this? In some places, that like it should be Yahusha's name, but it's translated to Yahuwah's name. And I seen this when I seen one of the verses that was in, I think, Matthew or Luke, one or the other, and it said Mashiach, Yahuwah. I was like, Yahuwah is not the Mashiach. And it don't matter how many times like you put something in the bug thing, they'll say, oh, we tried to correct this bug. And they'll give you another updated version, and it still didn't work. I know some of you, if you go to the digital CIFR and you try to click over to the next chapter, sometimes the chapter doesn't go back up to the top. It starts in the middle or goes at the very bottom. And they said they were supposed to fix this bug, and they ain't fixed it yet. Like I said, we're relying on our enemies to do the work for us because we don't own none of these apps. We don't have any of the translations. We don't have any of the original text. So we're literally fighting an uphill battle with our enemies of how to, I don't know, save and keep our history intact and keep it as pure as possible. But of course, there's going to be a lot of mistakes in it. Because obviously, they don't want us to learn about anything, especially ourselves. But what I was talking about in the last episode, when I said that when Yahuwah gives you an assignment, you bring it to completion. There's no sense of you running away, whining, crying, whatever pathetic vice or pathetic mannerisms that you or behaviors that you have. When Yah gives you an assignment, you bring it to full completeness. And I talked about Eliyahu, how he ran away, and then Yah had to show him who was really in charge and who really had the power to destroy not only him, but this entire creation if he wanted to. And then told him to go out there and finish that job. And I found another example in Joshua 14 and 17. In Joshua 14, Caleb was one of the scouts that went into the land of Yasharel to see if it was worth living in, if it was truly a land flowing with milk and honey. And of course, you know the story that most of them came back and said, no, the inhabitants of the earth or inhabitants of the land are eating up its inhabitants. So they were mentioning giants that they saw, because they appeared as grasshoppers. But when Joshua and Caleb came back, they said, no, it's a good land. It's a lot of space. It's good for us. And Yah was pissed. Yah was upset that he was giving them a land. And the first thing they saw was some giants and got scared. After they had literally just seen all those 10 plagues, they have seen and understood and seen Yah's power walking through the Sea of Reeds, not the Red Sea, the Sea of Reeds, in the middle where the Most High parted the Sea of Reeds. And yet they saw those giants like, nah, we can't live here. So Yah doesn't like cowards. He doesn't like cowardice. He wants us to solely rely on him even when we're in our fear and in our anxieties. So in Joshua 14, Caleb said, Moshe swore 7 oaths on that day, saying, surely the land whereon your feet had trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed Yahuwah Elohai. And now behold, Yahuwah has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since Yahuwah spoke this word unto Moshe, while the children of Yisrael wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. So when Caleb went to scout the land out, he was 40 years old. When they wandered through that wilderness for 40 years, he is now 85 years old. So he's wanting his inheritance. As yet, I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moshe sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war both to go out and to come in. 85 years old. This man said, I'm as strong as I was in my 40s. Now I'm in my 80s. I'm just as strong. I'm ready to go out and in, and I'm ready for war. So when people say you too old to be fighting, man, don't believe that garbage. Moshe was going through all he was going through when he was the king of Cush when he was in his 40s. When Moshe had to kill Og of Bashan, the giant, he was in his 80s. Y'all don't care how old you are. When he gives you an assignment, you bring it to completion. Joshua, When he went to war against the Canaanites, he was in his 80s. It's just something about when Yah has called you, it seems to me, and when you call you in your 40s, that your life is just starting. It's almost like a mindset when you reach your 40s. I'm talking about as men. I'm not talking about as women, because sometimes, regardless of what age women are, they act and think when they're still 14 or 15. And this is based on pleasure, pain, or trauma, or victimhood, or whatever. But when it comes to men, when we reach a certain age, a lot of things become narrow for us. You know, when you're in your 30s and your 20s, you want to do everything. You want to rip and run everywhere. You want to lay whatever bed you want to lay in. You want to go club hopping, partying. You have the strength to drink as much as you drink, smoke as you smoke, have sex as whoever and how many people you want. You have a lot of options when you're in your 20s and 30s. When you get to your 40s, your mind become more clear. You become more narrow-minded almost, because you know certain things are just faded out. When it comes to men, we get bored with things. Bored real easy. After a while, everything becomes boring. So you find that one thing that pleases you. Very simple. Men are very simple. Especially when you get older, you're even more simple. So it must be something about a mind of a man when he's in his 40s, and then even more so in his 80s. Because what else he thinking about? What else he think he got going on? An 80-year-old man ain't running around. An 80-year-old man ain't thinking about going to the club, or in their time, he ain't thinking about searching out hoes and hanging out, drinking and all that. He's just not doing that. His mind is on one thing. Now, for Caleb, his mind was on one thing, which was his lot of inheritance. And he wanted a really big mountain. And he said, as in scripture is stated, that because Yah has told me, since I followed him wholly with my all my heart, with all my mind, with all my soul, this is my inheritance. So I want it. So if I got to take it, I'm willing to fight for it. Don't let this age fool you. I'm as strong as my 40s as I am in my 80s. So he says, now therefore, give me this mountain whereof Yahuwah spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be Yahuwah will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as Yahuwah said. My man is in his 80s, knowing that there were giants in the land. He said, because you know that Yahuwah will be with me, it does not matter. I will drive them out because this is what Yah has told me. So Caleb, is not cowering from his mission because he know what his mission is. And Yahusha blessed him and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron for an inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizi, unto this day, because that he wholly followed Yahuwah Elohai of Yasharel. And the name of Hebron before was Kiriath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakim, and the land had rest from war. So Caleb was successful. And 80 years old, going into rooting out the Canaanites and everybody who dwelt around his lot or his inheritance. And one of the things that stood out for me is Kiriath Arba. If you look at that translation in the Sefer, it says the land or the city of the four giants. So are you trying to tell me if some of you are still blinded by that Palestine land being the holy land, how can four giants live in a land no bigger than New Jersey and have no other documents or records of anyone in the Mediterranean Sea or on the west side of Palestine being able to see and have any illustrations of giants, or especially four giants in that city? Wouldn't the Egyptians be painting the four giants that they could easily see from the pyramids? I mean, if from Egypt to Israel or Palestine is but a day's walk, you trying to tell me they're not going to be able to see four giants roaming around up there? Wouldn't those giants want a little bit more abundance and resources to actually eat? Because they would have to eat a lot. You trying to tell me that land, Israel, is filled with resources that could sustain four giants? No. So this is why it's important to understand where the real biblical lands are. Because it starts to make sense when you read it from the understanding that it's in South Africa. Now, I've seen Hebron, Mount Ramah, Mount Hebron, and Mount Moriah around the Basotho region of South Africa, which would make sense since that is where Garden of Eden was. It makes more sense because if the fallen angels saw the daughters of men, they would have to see them somewhere outside of the Garden of Eden, somewhere in South Africa. So the reason why those giants kept coming back there because they known of that region to be fruitful. It's almost like being at home. They at least known or had stories past the flood that this was their home. That maybe one day they were just waiting for their descendants to show up. Maybe they were just waiting for the fallen angels who were their grandfathers or their forefathers. Maybe they were waiting for them to show up. Why would they be in any other land? I mean, obviously, we can have this whole conversation later about Pangaea and have everything, all the lands were kind of close together. I'm talking about how Brazil fits nicely in Africa and Africa fits nicely into the Mediterranean and, of course, America. So before Yah did whatever he did to the lands and spread everything out, there are a lot of giant bones that were in America. So everything was kind of close. But for the giants that were in biblical times, they were around that region. So it makes more sense that they would be close there and not in Palestine or Israel. Now, Joshua 17. This is a mind of young men who were of war, who were out of the tribe of Manasseh. And they were given a lot for an inheritance. But there's the difference between them and Caleb. It says, yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. What did the Most High tell us to do? Did he not tell us to root out the Canaanites because their time was over? If we do not root them out, they will cause us to be a stumbling block unto ourselves because we will start doing their worship. We will start praising their gods. We will start doing their rituals and rites. That's why the Most High wanted us to remove the Canaanites from out of our land because they got into blood sacrificing and idol worship. Two things that the Most High hates. So we know the children of Manasseh comes from a line of Ham through the mother Aseneth. Yet it came to pass when the children of Joshua were waxing strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. So now they didn't drive them out and they'd be like, all right, you just pay us money to lay. They basically pay us rent. We want you to pay us rent to stay around us. And the children of Joseph spoke unto Yahusha saying, why have you given me but one lot and one portion to inherit, seeing I am a great people? For as much as Yahuwah has blessed me hitherto. And Yahusha answered them, if you be a great people, then get you up to the wood country and cut down for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the Rephaim, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for you. And the children of Joseph said, the hill is not enough for us. And all the Canaanite that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both they who are of Beth Shan and her towns, and they who are of the valley of Jezreel. And Yahusha spoke unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, you are a great people and have great power. You shall not have one lot only, but the mountain shall be yours, for it is a wood, and you shall cut it down, and the outgoings of it shall be yours, for you shall drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong. Now, if they know they are a great people and a strong people, why are they so hesitant to do exactly what the Most High say do? What makes them, or what put them in fear? That they did not at the time want to drive out all of the Canaanites. Why did they sit there and complain to Joshua about how small their inheritance was? When it came to Caleb, he knew exactly what was given to him. And he was ready to go whatever distance he had to go to make sure he had that lot inheritance. The children of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, their children, They get scared because the Canaanites had chariots of iron. Again, after seeing and knowing all that Yahuwah had did for Yasharel, they still were scared of the enemy. This is something we need to understand, especially in this walk, because their times are going to come where we are going to be face to face with the enemy. Are you going to cower? When the Most High has said multiple times in Scripture, be strong, be courageous, be brave, and I will fight for you. I will go ahead for you. So there's really no excuse for us to be cowards or to be weak-natured or weak-minded when it comes to our enemies or when it comes to anything else in this walk, to tell you the truth. But a lot of times people cannot deal with certain parts of Scripture because they're so focused on not being able to grow and staying away from the battle. It don't make no difference where you go and what you try to hide from. There is going to be a battle at your doorstep. And most people haven't conquered the battle within themselves, let alone want to fight their enemies or fight the war. People are trying to find comfort and not fighting the spiritual battle, the spiritual war. Be like Caleb. When you know something is given for you or given to you, you fight for more of what you want. Regardless of age, regardless of where you come from, regardless of what you've been through. Did not once did Caleb said, oh, I can't do it because I'm so stricken in years. Oh, I can't do it. I'm so tired from being in this wilderness for 40 years. That whole time that Caleb was wandering that 40 years in the wilderness, I guarantee you all he had on his mind was making sure he got to that lot of inheritance. That's the type of patience and energy you have to have when it's something that you know that Yah is going to give you. How far are you willing to go for it? How much do you have to go through to get what you want? Most people just give up, either crying or whining or begging. Most people just give up, especially when you're attached to religion. Because you're listening to a doctrine that says that if you just pay money, you'll get the blessings. If you just sow a seed, you'll get the blessings. That you don't really need to follow any laws, statutes, commandments. You'll get the blessings if you sow a seed through money. And most people don't understand the reason why they are not getting blessed. Most people think, like the children of Manasseh and Ephraim, who thought that I was given this, but it's not good enough for me. I want more. But I also don't want to drive out the inhabitants of the land because they are strong too. They have what we don't have. They have chariots of iron. How can I conquer this people? Give us another land. Give us something else that I don't have to go through an enemy that has chariots of iron. Yahusha, also being 80 years old, had the same mindset. If you are a great people, you're strong. You go up there and do it. What you coming to me for? You go up there and do it. Now, it doesn't say what the age of any of these sons were, but they said they were a great people and were men of war. So I don't know why they got down to the land and was like, man, they got chariots of iron. I don't think we could do it. Sowing self-doubt and then whimpering and whining about not getting their just due. I can see why multiple times that the Most High told Moshe and Aaron to back back so he can consume the people because they just didn't understand. Mind you, they didn't really have the Ruach HaKodesh. They were just following what they saw with their eyes. And you would think after seeing so much and knowing so much that you really would have a different type of fear of the Most High more than you would have of your enemies. Now, obviously, today we're not really going to war. We're not really going to war. You know, the Most High is not asking us to beat our plowing shares into hooks are pruning or, you know, into making swords of iron and steel. He's not asking us to do all that. He's simply asking for us to complete our role. That's what he's asking to do. You can whine, cry, do whatever reaction you usually have when you are in the world. But at the end of the day, the Most High has given us all an assignment, and we should make sure we come to the completion of that assignment. It should be very simple and very easy. So one of the things we have to go through is the information, the history, the text, the translation. That comes with time. That comes with actually investing time into things. And like I said, the older you get, you become less, I wouldn't say less emotional, but you really don't put so much into the worldly basket of how people handle their affairs. And what I mean by that is watching the young brother Sephiroth rant, scream, just throwing the millennials Sephiroth into the trash and all that. I look at it as, I want people to do the ascending smoke offerings, the new moon offerings, the new moon feast days. That's what my focus is. Making sure you are worshiping and praising the Most High in a way that he has called us to do it. That's even down to the meat we use, the drinks we use, the drink offerings we use, the wine we use, the other things that are mentioned in scripture that we can kind of tie it together from different parts of scripture that actually uplift the path of the Most High. When you're in your old age, when you're in your grown age, certain things become very simple. And that's how simple it is for me. When we first started, we wanted to wake everybody up. We were going at anybody. We're mostly Christians, but we were going at anybody. Any information that we find or found, we were going hard with it. We were making enemies out of everywhere because the information was taking us here. And once you get through that phase of fact-finding and history searching and map searching and information searching, scripture searching, everything becomes dwindling down to one aspect. How am I praising the Most High, and will he be accepting me as an offering by the way I live my life? That is the most important thing. It used to be, what translation is King James black or white? Some brothers are still having this argument. Then it was the 12 tribes chart. It was, oh, we can't say this word. We can't say that word. We can't use Elohim. We got to use Aluhom. And changing the Most High's name over about 30 to 40 times of what we should call him and call his son. We went through all of that already. But the one thing that was lost in the process of us going through that was, how are we serving Yah? If we go by the scriptures, we go by what he asked of his servants, his prophets, his kings, we should be following and trying to perfect that. Trying to find out true information about this world, trying to break down every little thing that this world has. After a while, you'll keep running into the Most High. After a while, you keep running into Yah. After a while, the more you go into this world and you strip it, I always say this, once you strip everything down that you believe in, the things that you used to love, you most certainly will end up finding Yah. And this is for you young followers or you young people who are just now coming into this walk. When you say you love something, strip it down. Find out why you love it. And I guarantee you, if you keep going what's behind it, you'll find little instances of what you love in this world connected to Yah. That's if you want to keep going. I know that Brother Anthony was talking about how his Ruach had to change because how he dealt with women and how he had to deal with those challenging aspects when you come into scripture, how it's supposed to clean you out, purge you, cut you like a double-edged sword. Not everybody can go through that. For you young men, specifically, I would advise you to go through that process as early as you can. As early as you can, because there is power in not only stripping this world down, but also stripping yourself down. I'm telling you, there's power in it. It may not seem like it at first because it's embarrassing. You never open up to anybody before. Some of you have never done therapy where you talked about your issues in front of a complete stranger. I'm not completely closing that option off to you, but some of you needed that, or some of you need that just to break the ice with yourself. It's not about feeling weak and thinking that, oh, you can't overcome certain obstacles if you don't have therapy. But some of you are just quiet. Like, I'm speaking for you, because I am a quiet person. Some of you are just quiet and you hold everything inside. And those things bubble over time if you're not used to speaking out. So the therapy sessions I used to go to was me being able to be comfortable speaking out to a stranger. So that caused me to start, you know, stop with the therapy and start speaking out to Yah. Now, like I said before, I talked about not going from A to B to C and just going to D. I think that's one of the aspects of going from A straight to D. I wish if I did it over again, I would rather have the knowledge to go straight to Yah rather than going to a therapist for a year and a half or so, just talking and nothing really happened. Because that's why I stopped. I stopped because nothing was really happening. I wasn't feeling any better. My situation wasn't getting any better. I was just bringing in more, I wouldn't say trauma, but I was just bringing in more anger and hatred and frustration into a situation that I couldn't do anything about. And no matter how many times I talked about it with this woman that was my therapist, nothing was working. And the one thing I did not like when I was in those therapy sessions is it to be turned around on me like I was doing something wrong. Most times I was doing something wrong, but certain places I knew I was right and I had the reason to be right, they would try to turn on me and I was like, you know what? Nah, this ain't it. I'd rather Yah, somebody I respected, a higher power, tell me, all right, you can't do this anymore if this is where you want to go. That's something that Yah could do that a therapist can't do. A therapist can't tell you where your direction is. Yah can tell you exactly where your direction is. And if this is the direction you want to go, if it be his will, he will make sure you'll get to the direction you want to go, but you must carry a mission first. In order for you to complete this mission, you then have to be tried. You have to be purged. So the steps in the process that go with that is to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, I know I struggle with this. I know I struggle with that. What do I have to do, Yah, in order for me to fulfill your will? Not my will, but fulfill your will. When you take you out of it, everything pretty much goes smooth after that, after a couple of years. Not saying that it takes that long, but it all depends on the individual. But if you're not ready to meet yourself, you're going to continue going to stumbling blocks and pitfalls, and you won't get to the blessings that are reserved for you. You'll be just chasing, and you'll keep meeting stumbling blocks where you're just not meeting the expectations of Yah. It starts with you, not the world around you. It starts with you. Yes, it's good to find out what the symbolism is, to find out what the numerology is, to find out that sports are rigged, the politicians are rigged, the Hollywood and all the actors and actresses and the top athletes in this world are Satanists. After you go through that, you must turn it onto yourself, because you can't learn about this world and think that's going to fix you. Especially if you keep running into the same stumbling blocks based on who you are. I'm only speaking to the way I went about it. For me, Yah had to drag it out of me little by little. If I went too fast, I would revert back to my old ways. If I went too slow, I would just get bored. I would just be still. I'd be stagnant. So the Most High kept me at a fast but delicate pace enough for me to open my eyes and for me to decide for myself if I'm going to choose life or death, if I want to choose the world or choose him. And he put me in situations where I had to think on my feet to say, okay, I know I should be done with this right now. I know I shouldn't be acting like this right now. I know I shouldn't be taking these type of people into my life right now. This is important, especially you young ones coming into this walk. Because if you veer too much to the right or veer too much to the left, the Most High is going to correct you in a way that it will humble you. And you will have to make a decision yourself. Do I want to keep getting humbled? Do I want to keep being embarrassed? Do I want to keep acting like a child in front of him? Or am I going to grow a pair? Or am I going to grow up in this rock, accept my actions for what it is, for me not being able to learn and change and grow within this Ruach? Am I going to be able to do this or do that or not? You got to make that decision. And I would hate for you guys to want to go through that where you're, with your back against the wall, where you're in desperate and dire situations each time, where your Ruach is pressed. I'm talking about pressed. I mean, at the last minute type pressed. Where you stress yourself out for you to actually know him. Like they say, like, why wait till the fire is hot to want to veer away from it? Why get to that point? Why get to where the stove is getting turned on? If you feel the heat, learn how to move. Like, okay, this is enough for me. Don't be in a situation where you're like, all right, I need to see how hot this is. Because all of us live that way, especially you men. You all live that way, gambling with your life, regardless of what it is. I bet y'all think right now when the last time you actually had your life in risk, and I guarantee you it had to do with something with nightclubs, drinking, girls, fighting, or being in this world. We all had that one scare situation and didn't even really scare us. When we come into this fear of the Most High, now we're in fear of that situation because we know damnation and judgment is on the other side of that. Brother Ron brought out a perfect scripture. I think it was in James. I can't remember what number it was, but it talked about being a teacher. And not everybody should want to be a teacher. Not everybody can be a teacher. Because that is more responsibility heaped upon you because you're leading a flock or you're teaching a flock. So some of you struggle with what can you do? What do you want to do when it comes to learning all this information and learning about scripture? Because you all going to have the fire in your Ruach to want to teach and want to direct those also. But when you come into that and you ask the Most High, this is what you want. You want to have a platform. You want to do the job. You want to be given a mission or work. You have to understand what comes with that. That you can't go out there and say, all right, I'm going to live this way and I'm going to preach this way. It's not going to work because the Most High is going to acquire your work of your hands, especially when it comes to teaching his word. I've seen many people be exalted when they came into this work. Came into this walk and work to where when they couldn't sustain themselves because it wasn't what they expected as far as the blessings or the covering or just the information that they were jumping into, they didn't know how to separate their Ruach from it and then backtracked, started talking against Yah. And now their platforms are completely almost non-existent. So the Most High knows exactly what you're doing, especially if you are in charge of a assembly. Or like Yahusha has given 10 talents or 5 talents or 2 talents, whatever he has given you to double. And if you are not doubling it and going back on your word or going back sliding into the world again, he will take everything away from you, even if you have nothing. So you think to yourself, if you're in the wilderness right now, it doesn't matter how old you are, if you are in the wilderness, do you have the Ruach of patience? Do you have the Ruach of fortitude? Do you have the Ruach of courage and bravery to stick it out in the wilderness to get your lot of inheritance? which the Most High has promised you, not only just to the nation of Yisrael, but has promised you. Now, I don't know the communications, the ins and outs of your relationship with Yah, but are you willing to go through the wilderness? It may not be 40 years. You don't know the time of when you're going to come out this wilderness in this walk. But can you sustain yourself through bravery and courage and knowing that on the end of this, at the end of this wilderness, you are giving a lot and an inheritance with the Most High that He has promised you if you bring the mission that He has given you to completeness? Will you have the same strength as Caleb, regardless of how old you are, when you get to wherever you got to go, will you have the same strength to, again, fight for your inheritance? It wasn't just given to Caleb. And that's what something the children of Manasseh and Ephraim misunderstood. They thought it was just something given to them that they didn't have to work for. They didn't have to fight for. Like, oh, we made it here. 40 years, we made it here. We shouldn't be having to fight nobody. I shouldn't have to be able to rub out anybody with an iron chariot. I want all of this. But if you're like Caleb, and you know by the time you get to this wilderness, you think the mission is done, you think the mission is over, this is when you fight the hardest. This is where you have a gut check or a look in the mirror, or you stare at yourself in the mirror and say, all right, now I got to fight for this. This is mine. Now I have to fight for it. And when I talked about that ruach of patience, because you must have patience to be in the wilderness for that long. And as soon as you get there, you get excited. You must have some type of patience. And the children of Ephraim, if you learn anything about the Exodus in scripture, you know the children of Ephraim left out of Mizraim, or left out of Egyptian bondage way before the time was prescribed. It's in Exodus if you read it. I think it's actually in Jasher if you actually go through it. In Exodus, the children of Ephraim tried to leave Egyptian bondage before the time came for them to leave. And what happened is the Most High destroyed them, or destroyed a large number of them, because they tried to leave out by the wayside in the road, and they got jumped. That's what happened. They got jumped. They had no food. They had no idea where they were going. But they left because they didn't want to do Egyptian bondage anymore. And the Most High destroyed them, said, no, I tell you when you should leave. That's almost like, you know, now that I think about it, people who were fleeing to South Africa, people were fleeing to Ghana and were fooled by this whole right of return. As soon as 400 years is over, 2019, people were getting on the jet, getting packing their stuff, packing their family up, and just moving to Ghana, when Ghana was just as destroyed economically as it is here. Ghana's going through hyperinflation. They're going through a lack of resources. So I don't know why they try to get everybody. Well, it was a scam for them for this whole right of return, because they showed you a slave port and say, here, this is where y'all came from. Y'all all live here. And people fell for it. And all they did was get celebrities. That's when you should know it was fake. They got celebrities to go get citizenships in Ghana. And really, it was a scam for Americans that came with money to help the economy. Because once tourists come in, they know African Americans had money. So I was watching this documentary of how people were upset that as soon as Africans or African Americans were coming into Ghana, the prices or hyperinflation was boosted, because they knew that we came with money, and that made all the residents, or some of the residents, upset, because obviously prices were skyrocketing due to tourism. So that's why people are putting out videos. So, I came over here, now I want to move back. I came over here, I don't like it. I came over here and I wasn't prepared. Blah, 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 blah. And that goes to the story in Exodus of the children of Ephraim. When the Most High said He's going to bring us out, the lands of the north and all the places He has scattered us, let Him bring us out. Why are y'all so quick to jump? Because you're scared of what this economy is going to be, or the civil war that's supposed to happen, or the race war is going to happen. Don't you understand that our enemies cannot touch us? And if our enemies are ever placed in our face, Don't we know from scripture and from stories, especially with giants? We're not even going against the Rephaim or the Nephilim or the Anunnakim. We're not going against them type of, you know, animals. We're not going against giants. We're going against people who are literally our height, if that. So we shouldn't be afraid of anything that happens upon this land. We should allow Yah to bring us out in his due time. Honestly, I don't want to leave yet. I got enemies in this land I want to see fall. I mean, I know that's petty and all that, but I do. I got people I want to see how they look when they go through this struggle, when they go through judgment and all the stuff that we speak about trying to encourage them to follow Yah. I want to actually see it through. I want to see exactly what's going to happen. And honestly, to tell you the truth, I want to go through this just for my own Ruach. I want to go through the anxiety and the stress. And just like my ancestors, my forefathers did when they left into the wilderness, I want to gain that type of strength. I know I'm lacking in certain areas when it comes to survival modes. I want to be able to know what that feels like. That's going to be my own personal little war. I don't mind going into the wilderness. A lot of people are cowards and they don't want to go through this. I want to go through it because I know iron sharpens iron. I know that the Most High is going to bring us and purge us and put us through the furnace and try us as gold is tried. But some people just want to remain like clay or remain like glass or lead that is not of any worth, which is mentioned in Ezra. He's causing a remnant, even you Gentiles, a remnant to be put through the fire to come out as gold. And that's not even everybody he's doing this with. So you might as well practice right now, signing up for that mission. And whatever mission he give you, I'm telling you, you're going to have to go through some type of anxiety and stress. You might as well get ready for it. It's nothing you can do to hide from it. Now, mind you, you shouldn't be put in fear by what this world can do to you. Because like I said, if you are exposing this world through its symbolism and numerology, you kind of know and understand how things are going to work. It should be very easy for you to understand that. If you know how this place operates, you know if they really had the power to destroy all of us. Matter of fact, if they had the power to destroy all Bibles, they would have done it already. They would just start it over with something new. We would just had Bibles of Zeus and Athena and Horus and Isis. We would have just had that. They just would have just written these books and just made stuff up. So even in this system that's controlled by Satan, it's still controlled and managed by the Most High. He can't do whatever he wants. The people you see get destroyed, you have to ask yourself, are they following the laws, statutes, commandments, and ordinances? Because that is what's keeping us alive. Now, even wickedness or wicked people are going to have their day. So don't be like, oh, you know, these people are evil and they're still alive. They have a purpose. They have a purpose. The Most High is putting everybody in their respective boxes. And mind you, certain wicked people need to be alive for your sake. Because once their resources are taken from them, you need to be in a spot or a place where you can receive their resources. Like, you don't understand. Like, sometimes when the wicked are running certain are in certain places, it's a benefit for you. Because the Most High is going to put you in a situation that once they are removed, when their wickedness and their sin comes to full completion and they are no longer needed, their loss will be your gain. This system can be spoiled. It truly can. If you learn and do it the right way, it can be spoiled. Some people focus so much on wickedness and what the wicked people get away with and what they, like Sean, oh, he's getting away with this and get away with that. It shouldn't even be bothering you. Because everybody who's attached to that system are gravitating to where their resources that they're stocking up or holding on to, or opportunities that they're holding on to, all of it's going to be gone in one fell swoop. And this is where you, there with your hands out, be like, ah, caught it. Like I said, if you actually read scripture, man, you can really have an understanding and really be at awe the way Yah works. How everything is connected. That no one really gets out of this place untested. And that's what you have to understand when it comes to especially scripture. You will be tested. So going back to the Ruach of patience that I was going to briefly talk about, I also said I was going to talk about the 10 trials of Abraham. And in no specific order, when I talked about Ruach of patience, I'm going to go into the 10th trial of Abraham. It's in Jubilees 19, 1 through 9. And in the first year of the first week, in the 42nd Jubilee, Abraham returned and dwelt opposite of Hebron. That is Kiriat Arba, 2 weeks of years. There we go. Hebron and Kiriat Arba has to be a mountainous and spacious land to have four giants living in it. And I've seen this around the Basutu, or modern day Basutu region, that this is where Hebron is. Even if you look it up in Southern African Place Names Dictionary, if you look up Hebron, it said this is the original name of this landmark or of this city or of this location. It doesn't say, oh, the Dutch settlers or the Germans decided to name it this because of scripture. No, no, no. It was named this originally. Look that up. And in the first year of the third week of this Jubilee, the days of the life of Sarah were accomplished and she died in Hebron. And Abraham went to mourn over her. See, then again, this is something else that's different from Jasher and Jubilees. It said the Jubilee of the days of life of Sarah were accomplished. Sarah fell, as according to another book, Sarah died almost like a heart attack because she believed Satan when he transformed himself into an old man. He told her at first, like, oh, Isaac died because Abraham went up to sacrifice him. And she went through whatever anxiety, stress of the heart. Then he came back and said, oh, I lied. He's alive. And through that amazement, through that excitement, she passed away. So I think she passed away before her time. Why does it say here that her life was accomplished? Like, again, does it matter? Not really. It really doesn't matter to me. But it's just, what story do you believe? You know what I mean? And Abraham went to mourn over her and bury her. And we tried him to see if his ruach were patient and were not indignant in the words of his mouth. And he was found patient in this and was not disturbed. Now, this doesn't really make enough sense to me, but it's, I'm going to read it again. And Abraham went to mourn over her and bury her. And we tried him to see if his ruach were patient and were not indignant in the words of his mouth. Now, he was told that he would be a great nation. So obviously a great nation knowing that he would have multiple wives. So did Abraham bury her and it's like, oh, on to the next one. Or I know I'm going to be promised, you know, more women. Or I know I was promised more children than this. So where is that going to come from? And the fact that he didn't say anything about that, of what he was told, especially from the words of his mouth, he didn't allude to anybody that, oh, don't worry about it. I'm going to be given more women after this. He didn't say anything like that. So that's why I think it was talking about here that he didn't say anything. He was found patient and this was not disturbed. So the Most High blessed him with many nations because he wouldn't go in there bragging about, oh, Sarah dead. Where's my next one? Where's Keturah at? Oh, I'm going to be given many nations after this anyway. So her dying don't really make no difference to me. He was found patient in this matter. For in patience of the Ruach, he conversed with the children of Seth to the intent that they should give him a place in which to bury his dead. This is another Ruach of patience. Because the Most High told Abraham where the children of Seth were, that he would give his descendants, generations after him, forever, the land in which Sarah would be buried. Now, some of us would be like, the Most High said this is going to be our burial ground. This is our land. So I'm not paying you for this land because the Most High is going to give it to me anyway. For in patience of Ruach, he conversed with the children of Seth to the intent that they should give him a place in which to bury his dead. And Yahuwah gave him grace before all who saw him and besought him in gentleness the sons of Seth. And they gave him the land of the double cave over against Mamre. that is Hebron for 400 pieces of silver. So even though Abraham knew that where he buried Sarah, he was going to have this land anyway, he still paid the children of Seth 400 pieces of silver just to bury her. And they besought him, saying, "We shall give it to you for nothing." But he would not take it from their hands for nothing, for he gave the price of the place, the money in full. And he bowed down before them twice, and after this he buried his dead in the double cave. And all the days of the life of Sarah were 127 years, that is 2 jubilees and 4 weeks and 1 year. These are the days of the years of the life of Sarah. This is the 10th trial wherein Abraham was tried, and he was found faithful, patient in the Ruach. And he said not a single word regarding the rumor in the land, how that Elohim had said that he would give it to him and his seed after him, and he begged a place there to bury his dead, for he was found faithful and was recorded on the heavenly tablets as the friend of Elohim. So Abraham knew when to keep his mouth shut. So the Most High has alluded that you are going to get a blessing. And that blessing is predicated on you keeping your mouth shut. Would you keep your mouth shut? Now, a lot of people in this generation have trouble keeping their mouth shut. But if you were told, "I'm going to give you this. If you do this for me, you go out and you don't act like I'm giving you the world. Would you do it? Would you be as humble as Abraham to get or know of the blessings and still walk with the Ruach of patience till you get it?" I think this goes nicely with Abraham waiting to be blessed with a seed. Even though he missed up a little bit because he listened to his wife, or hearkened to his wife and laying with Hagar, and that became a thorn to Sarah, but that it was at her will that she wanted Abraham to have a son. I think Abraham was so patient in the Ruach that he was going to wait for Yah, and being blessed with not only generations of the seed after him, but also of the land, even in his old age. Again, the Most High tried him all the way through his life in his old age to start giving him his blessings, giving him his lot of inheritance. His test was to act like he wasn't going to be getting anything. His test was to make sure he treated everybody as if they were equal, that he didn't treat anybody as if they were beneath him or that he knew more than they did. This is one of the reasons why Abraham is mentioned as a friend of Yah. That type of patience and humility, especially when you know what you know. A lot of us know so much, but sometimes you got to pull back. I know Israel is all over the internet right now talking about, "We're going to get this, we're going to do this, we're going to have this, you ain't going to have it, and we're going to be here, and we're going to be there." I was guilty of it when I first started this walk. I'm like, I went right to Revelation, is it 21:12 or 12:21? The one where it says the name of the 12 tribes on the gates of New Jerusalem and New Heaven. I was quick, like, we up here on the gates, y'all ain't up here. I'm up on the gates, y'all not up here. The religion's not up here. I think when you go through that type of humility, you understand, like, okay, not everybody is going to make it into these gates. But we treat everybody as if they have a chance to make it through these gates. That's why I started pulling back and not engaging so much with every little thing. And that comes with just being in this walk and being in this Ruach HaKodesh for a while. You start understanding that you don't need to teach and wake up everybody, because everybody is on their own journey, their own phases in life. And there's really nothing you can do. Nothing. And I mean nothing you can do that's going to hurry people who is just not meant for them to know. The Most High is not waking up everybody. You have to understand this as well. He has selected already a few, not many, a few. A few is called, if even fewer are chosen. He is called a few to understand his walk, understand his words, understand his righteousness in the works and sacrifice of his son. Not everybody can understand this. So when we go out teaching and go out trying to share the word, we have to have this understanding of Abraham. Not only through, you know, the patience of Ruach, because maybe some people just, it just takes longer for them to get it. But we still should start acting as if everybody's allowed to go into the kingdom, that they shouldn't know what our promises are. Only, I'm talking about individually. If the Most High has promised you something, or the Most High is setting you up for a blessing, you should act like you're not getting it, is what I'm saying. You should still have the confidence that you're getting it, but you should not be overly enjoyed in front of others that you're getting something. Because you don't know what could affect something. And it says in here that, that Abraham did not disturb the things that, or to disturb the blessings that Yah had for him. A lot of people with their mouths and their actions are disturbing the blessings that Yah has set up for them. I think that is what I try to pull out. I'll say it again. People's mouths and actions are disturbing the blessings that Yah has set up for them. That's based on whatever you go through in this walk. That's why I said, I'd rather you go from A to D than sit there mingling around, effing around, and finding out through B and C. Tighten up, straighten up, especially you men, and then be able to walk with the same confidence of Caleb, knowing that you are promised a lot in inheritance, knowing that you're in the wilderness for a larger amount of time, and knowing you have to go through this and still come out on top and say, you know what, I'm ready to, again, to fight for what is mine. I see y'all next time.